is equal MC squared.
Electric power is everywhere.
We can change the world overnight.
It's time to get out the lab coats, get your beakers, your test tubes, your goggles. In this scenario, maybe it's a telescope or some sort of thermal blanket to protect you from the heat wave we're all in. Maybe it's a petri dish, or maybe you're heading to the gym with your spouse. Good morning, Commander Cat. What is going on?
Oh, no, I think I kind of want the reverse of the thermal blanket. In fact, you've inspired me to wonder whether anyone has done any research to show those, you know, weighted blanket keep you cool in summers that are massively invading my socials at the moment are real. regrettably, I don't have a story on that today, but I do want to apologise in advance and give heads up that not the first story today, but the second story today. Please stop eating and drinking before I
Okay, we'll stop thinking about eating, but for this first story, it's all right that we continue to finish our breakfast, I reckon. This one is definitely one I was intrigued by and I'm a bit curious about, to do with leaving your spouse behind when you're heading to the gym.
Yeah, so remember last week we had that story, don't worry about doing 10,000 steps a day. Researchers reckon, you know, 6,000 steps is probably good enough.
Sure, yes.
So this links more to that story than any other story that I have this week. I'm going to call it a long, slow burn segue as part of things. I'm really inspired by this research. Now, the timing is totally because, as you scarily said, not that long ago, today is the 1st of February, and it's usually about this week where people's New Year's resolutions are thrown out the window. Now, that's not just because it's going to be a 40-plus day here in Perth, but it's just after about 3 or 4 weeks, you're like, yeah, I just can't.
Yeah.
But anyway, this research from Nanyang Technical University in Singapore looked at 254 people all aged between 54 and 72. So that's those people who've perhaps been together for a little while, and they were looking to see whether, you know, having your gym or your exercise buddy being your spouse was good. Because, you know, there's a lot of logic behind that. We know the benefit of the, say, for example, the West Australian Act Belong Commit campaign, which saw a lot of gym buddies develop. And big shout out to my ExoFit girls or the gym owls, as we still go to the gym together despite moving around for a few different places. But this research says that if you're going to do that and get a gym buddy, do not make it your partner.
Okay.
Anybody but them. Now, I was a little surprised by this particular research because I would have thought, you know, the thing about a partner is it's much easier to coordinate going to the gym with them. Although if you've got a group you go to, like I do, we have a WhatsApp app and you see the WhatsApp, hey, anyone for the gym at 7:15? I think that's great. But this one suggests that, you know, you actually don't perform as well if you're exercising with your buddy being your spouse as you do with other people.
I'm a bit concerned that, yeah, maybe it could be a scenario where people stop going to the gym altogether, though.
Yeah, look, definitely don't want to change that particular aspect. It's just about finding maybe a broader social network. Now, I'm not sure why it is the case. In fact, researchers are like, look, we're not really sure. All we've been able to show is that if your buddy that you exercise with, whether it's out walking or whether it's going to the gym, actually are less active overall than those people who make an additional effort to catch up with friends, it's really fascinating research. So watch this space.
That's really interesting and a good encouragement to keep up with your New Year's resolutions. Maybe just adjust them if they include your partner or your spouse, and maybe get them to include your friends. Now, our next story did come with a warning. We are about to talk about a drink that I find frankly disgusting, but I understand that people do find it, you know, exciting and delicious, especially if maybe you add a little bit of Tabasco and a celery stalk stalk and some pepper to it. We're, of course, talking about tomato juice. Bloody Marys are my nightmare. But I understand that they have a purpose. They're beloved. There's a space for them. Now, beyond talking about tomato juice and Bloody Marys, we're actually talking about a different use that they might have than in your favourite savoury cocktail. Commander Cat, what's going on for tomato juice at the moment?
So researchers from Cornell University suspect or have identified that tomatoes, in particular tomato juice, could actually help with different types of food poisoning. Now, they have particularly focused, perhaps appropriately, on typhoid type of gastro, given the Bloody Mary. I think I might actually draw from her. Someone will definitely know. Text in to the station if Bloody Mary is named after typhoid Mary as part of that. But they're looking at it as being a readily cheap and accessible way of treating typhoid, which of course affects so many people globally. I think early last year, researchers found that 64 countries had populations of children under the age of two who didn't eat any fruit or vegetables, and they thought that that made them more prone to outbreaks, particularly those which are drug resistant of typhoid.
Oh my goodness.
Remains. Despite the fact that Typhoid Mary would now be probably about 200 years old if she was alive. Now, I love tomatoes. I love them in salad. I love them in pizza. I love them in Italian foods. Taylor and I had lots of discussions about how I could improve my spaghetti making powers. I don't even think gastro or typhoid would make me drink tomato juice as part of it. However, if you are somebody who could potentially palate that, you might actually find it useful. And it's interesting. It's not so much that it's the tomato, although eating vegetables is good for you. They actually found that tomatoes had aspects in it which could help fight the bacteria. So they're kind of like an antibacterial, it seems, or antifungal, which sounds really, really, really odd. I just don't. Not enough to make me drink tomato.
I mean, it's not enough to make me drink tomato juice either, but I can imagine it. You know, sometimes you get a really acidic tomato. Sometimes the way that you're eating it sometimes can feel like it's, you know, stripping all of the good stuff out of your mouth. But maybe it's just, you know, the same as squirting a bit of sanitizer in there. Maybe that's what we're talking about. Maybe just a little bit more delicious.
Would you like to make me feel sick? Everybody as part of that. Look, this is super early, so no humans were required to ingest tomato juice as part of this. Please do not squirt hand sanitizer into your mouth. I would almost go as far to say as one of the bottles of spray perfume that I have next to me probably tastes better than tomato juice in my mouth.
Oh, Commander Cat, that's shameful.
But in the lab, we definitely have been able to identify that tomato juice is great at killing off Salmonella typhi or typhoid for
it. It's exciting. Well, it's a good reason for you to get out there and maybe have a bit of a Bloody Mary, especially today on a hot day. If you are so inclined, then take this as your excuse. Take it as your reason. Commander Cat will be back on your airwaves in just a tick to get us across a few more stories hanging out in the headlines. On Breakfast, it's Demon Days with Moths. Now, moths are coming up in the next story. It's science time here on Breakfast. Of course, every Thursday, we take a little bit of time to have a look at the science stories hanging out in the headlines with the one and only Commander Cat. Commander Cat, moths in the next story. Now, you've said, you know, we get little notes. Look into the behind the fourth wall. What is it? You look behind. I always forget that expression, beyond the fourth wall, or like a look behind the curtain kind of energy, is Commander Cat likes to send funny notes with every story that she's found. And on this one, it was like a moth to the flame or my aircon tonight, which I appreciate is probably how we're all feeling about aircon units today. It is very, very hot, but that's not the part we're focusing on. We are thinking about moths. Moths aren't drawn to flames.
No, this completely blew me away. And I'm going to admit, this story actually I emailed to myself, actually, I think really early yesterday morning. Loved it. And then yesterday I saw moths everywhere. So I definitely know I've got a pantry moth problem. Shout out to everybody in Perth who probably is in the same boat. But there was a whole cluster of them hanging around my air conditioner last night, as well as having a few outside. And it's not unusual for us to see more moths at this time of year, because they do actually like, as the story describes it, balmy summer nights. I'm going to say that there was nothing balmy about last night's summer night, particularly not at 10:30. But no one's ever really studied whether it's true that moths are drawn to the flames. And those of us who are old enough to remember the opening of New Parliament House will know that the lighting installation of New Parliament House when it was opened actually caused the bogon moth, which is a very prominent, I think also endangered moth on the East Coast, to hoard in droves towards the light of Parliament House. The researchers in Imperial College London have suggested, you know what, it's not what we think it is. It's not that they're just going there like must have light, kind of zombie mode. And they recorded, I love this, 477 different instances of insects flying near an artificial light source to see if there were any cool patterns about it. And what they noted is that there were three uniquely different types of movements for moths.
I'm just going to let you keep going. There's three different, I just don't know what question to ask you, because I just am quite shocked that moths aren't drawn to the flame. There's different movements.
Well, I'm wondering whether they used an LED light, because it kind of does look like an LED light in the photo. And maybe it's a case that, you know, moths really are drawn to true flames or light sources, which are heat, and of course LED don't. So the three patterns that they had was an orbiting behaviour, and they took like time series photographic images of them to help do this analysis. And what they noticed, man, I really wish this wasn't radio and it was TV so you could see me floating my arms around, but what they noticed is when they were undertaking orbiting behaviour, they had a wide wingspan and they were literally just flying around. Kind of, you need to imagine, if you see one of those birds that are kind of just riding the thermals, so one of the predatory birds or birds of prey that fly around, you know, kind of just, you know, swooping around going, man, this is cool, I could do this forever.
So they're just sort of lapping the lights.
Yes, so that's orbiting behaviour. So that's great, pretty handy. I imagine that's butterflies in the chill out zone. They then have what is called the stalling behaviour, and I'm going to totally put this down to teenagers that you've asked to do something at home as a pattern. And they flap their wings and they're trying to get there. They kind of get partway around and they make what I would call a bit of a hockey stick curve around the light. But really, they're not doing much. They're just kind of going, oh, do I have? Do kind of movement as part of that. Love that one. The other one that they do is what I'm going to call the top gun movement.
The cat.
So you need to go back in time, back to the original Top Gun movie, where Tom Cruise's character Maverick flies upside down onto the MiG and just kind of hangs out in a cool way. That is totally what this third movement is about. No moths, I hope, were harmed in the making or the filming of this particular movement. But it's the first time we've ever seen it.
Oh, okay. So they aren't drawn, but they're sort of like hanging out around the flame. They're actively doing different things. They're not necessarily zombie mode going to the flame.
I think it's that they're kind of trying to seek out on a cold Perth night, you know, that beautiful heater that you might have outside, or they're trying to head towards the air conditioner today. But it's definitely not just a case that they're all just going there, you know, with one end in mind. They definitely have different things that they are doing. I cannot wait to see if there are other flying animals or species which actually do this, because I am totally fascinated. I really wish they had a YouTube video for this one, because I would love to do it. Watch it. I think it would be awesome.
Well, okay, our last story moves on from a moth to a flame and then goes to a physicist to reversing time. Essentially the same thing. What's going on with our final story, Commander Cat?
Yep, total, you know, we just want to seek that. We want to seek knowledge. We want to go to the light source. But up until now, we've gone, you know, time moves in one direction. Now, yes, there are some theories that suggest that it could go back in time, but short of the Back to the Future movies and a few others, Terminator being the most notable one, for all we can tell, in the known universe, time goes in one direction. And for me, that one direction is appearing way too rapidly. Researchers in Germany and Denmark have gone, well, actually, there might be some materials for which this might not be totally true all the time. And the first one that they've identified is glass.
Okay, so glass is going back in time?
Yeah, well, yes and no. Now, there are some really big ideas behind why it's not really possible. One of them is the second law of thermodynamics. I'm not going to give you a thermodynamics lesson, although if you're really interested, I can recommend some great textbooks associated with those. But what they've said, or what they've identified, is that materials like glass actually change in ways that have nothing to do with what's going on in the world around them, which potentially means that, you know, the notion of time passing and things aging, if you will, actually might not occur for the idea of glass. Now, we've known glass is really hunky for years. You know, you often, as a kid, hear about, you know, maybe your grandparents, your great-grandparents talking, you know, glass is always thicker at the bottom because it's a fluid and over time it flows down to the bottom. If you haven't heard that, it's awesome to see.
I have not heard that. I'm baffled this morning.
Oh my goodness. I so need to have a lesson with your grandparents, your parents, maybe older relatives about doing that. So that's based on the idea that, you know, we can go back in time and have a look, particularly in Europe. I've noticed this where they had stained glass windows and apparently it's thicker at the bottom. Could argue that it's not doing that. But these researchers are suggesting that, you know, maybe we can reverse age materials like glass just because of some of the unique properties. Now, they're not at this point in time saying, yep, if we've got glass, we can swing back in time. But they're definitely saying that things like fluids, for which glass is one of them, we might be able to do some tinkering around with it so that it, in theory, kind of, you know, deviates from this process, this aging process, a little bit. Do not expect that to influence anything about how you or I or anybody else age. But amazing to see, and I imagine we're going to see lots of papers over the next couple of years around, you know, can we reverse aging in anything that's considered flu-like and perhaps extend into other materials.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this develops and see, yeah, what it is going to mean for us understanding the way that time affects real life things, things that you can hold in your hand, and imagining the idea that you can reverse the effects of time on those things. Bizarro. Big, yeah. Bizarro energy, and Back to the Future, I'm assuming, is not going to come into fruition in the way that we want it to.
No, what a shame.
Yeah, really.
We lost a lot of great things in that, you know, the DeLorean.
Where are the hoverboards? I want one. I know that they kind of exist, but it's not the same, you know?
Yeah, they're mostly on water. Watch this space. I imagine that this is going to be one of those stories that might actually die a quiet death, won't revolve around changing any physics textbooks anytime soon, but interesting anyway.
Very interesting. Commander Cat, thank you so much for getting us across all the science stories hanging out in the headlines, as always, and I hope that you're not subject to drinking any tomato juice anytime soon.
Have a great week.